I am not Paul Prideker.
You are not, but I'm so glad you're here. Wireless Mike, welcome to Squawk 1200. As I pointed out yesterday, the reason I'm in this chair is because I was in your chair when you brought me in years ago.
Yes, I've replaced myself.
Yeah, well, hey, we can start this process again now.
Excellent.
So our first quarter hour every day is a visit with one of the agencies participating in the International Federal Pavilion. Today is NOAA Day, and we're talking to Ed Holicky, who's the agency representative in the IFP for NOAA. And starting tomorrow, you're the chairman of the IFP. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
I'm sorry.
Well, it's a big responsibility.
It's a lot of work.
A lot of work, yep.
So, Ed, you've got a couple of folks from NOAA here with us. Tell us about what programs they're involved. Tell us who they are, and then we'll talk to them about the programs they're doing.
Sure. We have quite a few different things and people out here at NOAA. One of the things that we brought this year and are highlighting this year, and they'll go into it a little bit more, is it's the 100th anniversary of the NOAA Corps. So it's a huge anniversary for them, and we brought the Twin Otter plane, and we have Lieutenant Lindsay Norman here. She'll talk a little bit about that. Also, Carrie Ash, I apologize for the name.
Allheiser,
and she'll talk about the NOAA Airborne Snow Survey Program as well. And they're all the way out in the Warbor section, so we're encouraging everybody to go out there and visit with them and see the Twin Otter plane out there. And then we also, in the pavilion, we also have, for instance, the Hurricane Simulator, which is a big hit out there. And then we have various programs from the Center Weather Service units that are at the ARTSIs at the for FAA for the pilots. And we also have NOAA SOARSAT program as well.
So if somebody doesn't know what the NOAA Corps program is, it's been around 100 years, but what is it?
I'll defer to Lindsay and let her talk about it.
I am the NOAA Corps. I'm one of 321 commissioned officers in the NOAA Corps. NOAA Corps is actually its own uniformed service. So everyone's heard of the five armed services, and there's actually two more. There's the Public Health Service, and there's the NOAA Corps. NOAA Corps is the seventh and smallest. We don't have anyone who's enlisted. We just have officers. And our primary mission is to support NOAA through flying airplanes and driving ships. So NOAA actually has 9 aircraft. One of them's the Twin Otter that you see out here on the Warbird ramp. And then we also have 16 ships. So we're largely a group of maritime officers, but there is a small aviation component to it as well.
And so you're part of that aviation component. Tell me what you fly and where.
I fly the de Havilland Twin Otter, and I also fly the Turbo Commander. All of our planes are actually based in Lakeland, Florida, but they're usually not there, and I'm usually not there. I usually support the Airborne Snow Survey Project, so I get to fly all over, really, the northern U.S., southern Canada, and Alaska. The awesome part of my job that I've been telling everybody is that means I get to fly at 500 feet all the time.
And wow. You get to fly in places that's cold.
I do, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm probably the only person in Florida who owns a winter coat.
Yeah, so why are you based in Florida and then doing snow survey work? It seems like it might make more sense to have you based somewhere other than, Florida?
Well, the people who do know about the NOAA Corps and NOAA's mission, probably our most famous aircraft are the two P-3 Orions and the G-4 Jet.
Got it.
So those folks are actually out flying into hurricanes and around them. So that's why we're based in Florida, and it's just a little bit easier to keep everybody in the same place.
So when you're doing snow surveys, I mean, it snowed. What more do you need to know? What are you learning that you can then use that information?
Are you pointing radar at it for depth? Is that the deal?
No, actually, we're not looking at depth. We're actually looking at the density of the snow. So we have a gamma detector in the back of the plane. When we fly at 500 feet, we're actually measuring the gamma radiation that naturally occurs at the top of the soil. So during this time of year, when there's no snow or water on the ground, we'll actually go around and get a baseline measurement off one of our 2,600 flight lines. And then once the snow has fallen in the winter season and everybody else is too cold to fly, I'm actually out flying around over the same area. And the difference between the signal that we get then and what we had at the baseline tells us how dense the snow is. And that goes into the river runoff forecast for spring flood melt.
That all makes a lot of sense.
And so that's going to tell you if you're going to get a flood in the spring when it all melts, right?
That's true.
So that I got to keep it simple for people like me. So... So Is that all the flying you do all year round? So you do, you're flying those routes in the summer to get the baseline, and then in the winter to find out the pack, the snowpack? Or do you do other flying on top of that?
That's the majority of the flying I do. We actually have 4 Twin Otter aircraft, and so they're kind of the workhorse of our fleet. A lot of times we're doing marine mammal surveys, so we'll actually, predominantly on the East Coast, we'll take a group of 6 to 8 scientists in the back of the plane, and we'll fly them out between 600 and 1,000 feet up to 200 miles offshore, and they are checking out the abundance and movement of the endangered species. So that's I've been pretty involved with that. We also do a coastal mapping project, and that means we have a LIDAR on the plane, and we actually fly about 1,200 feet over coastal regions to update nautical charts. And then finally, we normally do about 1 to 2 air chemistry projects every year. So last year, I was lucky enough to go to the North Slope of Alaska for a little over a month. And there, I had a group of 2 scientists with some specialized equipment that were taking air samples to determine what the composition of the air around the oil fields is.
So now, how much of this requires you to not only be a pilot, but be a scientist and do all this stuff?
So NOAA Corps actually requires you to have a bachelor's degree, and you have to have 48 science and math credits. So that's a unique thing about our service. They want you to be able to not only be able to fly a plane and drive a ship, but to be able to talk to scientists at a scientific level. The majority of what I do is supporting science, but I'm okay with that.
That's Lieutenant Lindsay Norman, who's a who's part of the NOAA Corps, who's celebrating its 100th year today. Also, we've been talking with Ed Holicky, the agency rep at the International Federal Pavilion for NOAA. Carrie Olheiser, I want to turn to you about the Airborne Snow Survey Program. Is it too early to start to connect dots between things like snow density and global warming? Are you looking that far? Are you looking that broadly?
More of what we're looking at is this providing the information and data to provide inputs into the river forecast models and such. And so we just are providing more information to the forecasters and the other folks, and not actually making the forecasts and those sorts of assumptions.
Okay. All right. So I took a way big overstep there, but I can imagine how, you know, snow density and snowfall and all the things that sort of relate to that might be dots connecting somewhere, but that's above our pay grades, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So do you, over periods of years, track what the snow density is in different areas to learn patterns of what the weather and what the greater climate is doing?
More of our mission is, we've been doing this since 1977, and so we've been about 40 years or so that we've been collecting this airborne data and really determining what the water content of the snowpack is. And so we have quite a bit of historical data, and we typically will do also fall soil moisture conditions, so we can also get a kind of a handle on how the winter is going to go, so how much moisture is actually in the soils before the snow actually falls. So we've been noticing that, you know, some areas, that some years we've been getting the snowfall a little bit earlier, and a little bit since other times it's been a bit later. So it's just a, you know, regional changes and dependencies. So,
and then after you collect all this information, and you can see that, wow, this let's say this stream right over here has a lot of snowpack and a lot of moisture in that snow, and we think if it all melts too quickly, there could be a flood. I'm assuming that's kind of the end result. How does that information get out to the citizens and the people in that area?
So how it typically works is, we work very closely with the river forecast centers, and those are the folks that make all of those forecasts in conjunction with the weather forecast offices. And so they have areas of concern and interest, and they'll come to us and say, we need additional information, additional data. This is how the scenario is sitting up. We don't have enough information. Can you go collect some of this airborne gamma data? And we will figure out, we take that data, we send it to those forecasters, and then they're able to make those forecasts and such. Then that information is translated then to the folks, citizens and others, through websites and those sorts of outlets.
So Ed Holicky, who's the or what's the most common question or topic that you're getting, that you're talking about as people visit the pavilion?
Over there, which I'm a part of, I'm part of the Aviation Weather Center, and this is the reason why we're here at EAA, is basically we're the ones that issue the forecast for the pilots. We're the ones who issue the SIGMETs, the IRMETs, and all the forecasts the pilots would read or get the information. And we've basically what they want to learn is what's the latest and greatest with our website. We have millions of people that go to our websites, lots of pilots. So throughout the week, we had a ton of pilots just trying to find out what's new with our website, what kind of information. The biggest thing that's going on right now for our organization is we're getting away from text forecast product, and we're going to graphical. So coming October will be more graphical forecasts for people versus the text product that we would issue on a daily basis. And so we're getting questions about, what's that going to look like? How does that look like? And what's been going on? So our forecasters over there are showing people the latest forecast.
And what is the website that you guys have for providing aviation weather?
We're www.aviationweather.gov. And basically, you can go on there, you can zoom in, zoom out anywhere in the world. That's one of the things that a lot of people don't realize. We're one of two world area forecast centers around the world. It's us, which is the Washington Center, and then also London Center, so just outside London, England. I'm one of the international forecasters, and I forecast and coordinate with countries around the world.
That's Ed Holicky, who's the agency representative from NOAA in the International Federal Pavilion. As they say, you'll be here all week, which of course ends tomorrow as we speak here. Also, Carrie Olheiser with the NOAA Airborne Snow Survey Program, and Lieutenant Lindsay Norman, a member of the NOAA Corps, celebrating its 100th anniversary this year. So next quarter hour is going to sound a little bit like morning radio. We're going to talk to actor and comedian Dave Coulier, known for his role as Uncle Joey on Full House. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. You're listening to EAA Radio.